Thank you. We're also joined by Rodan Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Now, Secretary Roberts, we see how the Raimondo administration is trying to reduce Medicaid spending. There was once a Governor Don Carcheri who had the global Medicaid waiver that had the same intent. Why didn't that work, and why will your administration's effort be more successful?
So actually, that global waiver has worked in some respects, and our spending is below what it might have been without the global waiver. But we have not taken advantage of some of the delivery system changes that waiver offers us. And that's one of our goals as we enter this process. We have the tools in our toolkit. We haven't used all of those tools effectively.
When will the state make available past due expenditure and global waiver reports so those can help inform the discussion on Medicaid?
One of my goals in this new role is to make sure we are meeting all of those responsibilities in a timely way. So my expectation is that we will be doing that as soon as we possibly can.
Can you put a specific date on that?
We have multiple reports that we're preparing, so it would depend exactly which one we are referring to.
Let's go to Scott.
Just wondering, how's this going to affect the average Rhode Islander? Let's say you have grandma or grandpa in a nursing home. We know that we have the highest percentage in the country of fragile elderly, people 85 and above. We have a lot of people getting dementia and Alzheimer's. They cost a lot of money to deal with. How do you deal with these families and also the nursing home industry? We can't kill it yet.
No, and we're sitting at the table with the nursing home industry. Actually, this morning, Friday, we have the head of quality for the American Healthcare Association, the national organization, coming to talk to us about how do we pay for improved outcomes in nursing homes? How do we define them? How do we make sure our nursing home residents who are receiving very good care in the nursing homes aren't in the hospital more than they need to be, aren't in the emergency room more than they need to be? These are the types of expenses we're trying to manage that will also improve quality for those families.
Are so-called accountable care organizations going to be part of your effort to reduce Medicaid spending?
So they already are in Rhode Island. We have two accountable care organizations certified by Medicare. One is at Coastal Medical. Another is at Care New England. And we in Medicaid have actually not participated. And one of my primary goals is in talking to them to see how they can benefit the people who we serve who are also served by them.
How will your administration ensure that these organizations are achieving the goals that they're supposed to?
So the federal government has some pretty strict requirements for them about reporting information. We are in a regular conversation with them, and we do not right now have our patients served by those ACOs. So part of our agreement with them when we built those relationships is going to be for very strong reporting, so we know we are serving patients the best we can.
Yet we talk about this all the time, but then again, there's this conga line of duplication that goes on and on and on in Rhode Island. Kent Hospital just got approval for angioplasty. What's that, 15 miles away from the Providence Teaching Hospitals? All we're doing is building more expenses into the system. Why are we still doing this stuff?
Well, what we need to be doing is paying for value, not volume. So if we are paying for every single service provided and every single admission to a hospital and every single emergency department visit, you are correct. We are just adding more and more cost to the system. If we, through an accountable care organization, pay Care New England a fee to support improved care and health of a patient, then that investment is their responsibility, not our responsibility. We will pay them for the value of the services that they offer to us, not how many services they deliver.
Good luck with that. Now, the other thing is, how much has our healthcare delivery system been hurt and being poached from by Massachusetts relentlessly, from what I can see, by the failure of the Care New England and Lifespan merger? I mean, it makes no sense to have Butler Hospital here and Bradley Hospital in two different hospital chains. I mean, some of this stuff just makes no sense.
So this has, as you know, been an ongoing conversation for, let's see, since before Women and Infants Hospital was built. And I have a 26-year-old who was born in that hospital. It was already here. So this is a conversation.
I was born lying in. I mean, it goes
so was
way
my
back.
Husband.
It goes way back.
This is a conversation, and we have both of them in the same room, in the same conversations, very frequently. It is a relationship that needs to grow on the research side, needs to grow on the clinical coordination side. If you've got a young child who's been in the neonatal intensive care unit and then has ongoing healthcare needs, they end up in the Hasbro system. This is something that we work with on the government side all the time.
But nobody ever does anything about
it. We need
those
boards. These are independent, not-for-profit organizations that we work with. And some of our goals are going to be around requiring coordination of services. For example, that child with special healthcare needs, they're in a single program for us. We're working across different institutional structures. We can help to make sure they do that work efficiently and well.
We're talking here with Rhode Island's Health and Human Services Secretary Elizabeth Roberts. We all remember a couple of years ago hearing about the multi-million dollar compensation package for the CEO of Lifespan. So I wonder if you think executive compensation is too high for some of these hospital executives, particularly at not-profit or not-for-profit ones like Lifespan.
Well, as we were just talking about, these are private, not-for-profit organizations. There are, in fact, proposals being offered as part of our Reinventing Medicaid, and we've asked the public for ideas, and we've gotten a lot of ideas. One of them is about setting a percentage of revenue, for example, as the executive compensation, or in some way determining a cap on executive compensation. We're looking at everything as we look at these proposals that come in. It is tough for us as in government to be, when we don't pay all of those bills, to say what that CEO...
Are Medicaid dollars helping to subsidize these compensation packages?
Well, to the extent that Medicaid is a major payer for care at most of our healthcare providers, all of those revenue sources, Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross, all help to pay that salary.
I'm wondering, you never lost an election in Rhode Island and for the state Senate and for lieutenant governor. Why'd you never run for higher office?
So I have to say that I am in the job of my dreams right now. I am diehard policy wonk. And as I looked at the opportunities ahead of me, very lucky to be having this job and this challenge at this time in my career.
There's some legislation in the General Assembly to legalize marijuana and treat it like alcohol. As Health and Human Services Secretary, do you support or oppose that?
So at the risk of offending my state senator, Senator Josh Miller, that's something I think I want to look very hard at before signing on board. I think as somebody who oversees the Department of Behavioral Health, Developmental Disabilities and Hospitals, I want to be really careful that we're not sending a very complicated mixed message to our recovery community as I would be if I were to come out and support a proposal like that.
Where do things stand with Rhode Island's version of Obamacare and the effort to have options for people who are opposed to reproductive rights? Have those options been created in the state's three versions of Obamacare?
On the health insurance exchange, HealthSource Rhode Island, there is currently an option available through Blue Cross and an option for individuals and an option through United for small business. When open enrollment happens in the fall for enrollment as of January 1, there will be a proposal from each plan at each metal level. As you know, we have kind of silver, bronze, silver, gold. There will be one available from each carrier at each level.
Just wondering, as we look at Obamacare, why do we have to subsidize it again with a tax on insurance policies?
So the federal government has provided the money for us to build this system. This has not been state money. And in January 1 of 2016, it is required to be self-sufficient. So if you look, we've looked across the country, and if you look at the national exchange, we've looked at the states. Every state has some form of assessment on the premium. We have chosen, actually, our assessment on small business is the lowest in our region. We're below both Connecticut and Massachusetts because for the vast majority of individuals purchasing, the federal government is going to subsidize their premium, so it will also subsidize that assessment. We did our best to make it a prudent approach, and now the legislature will have the opportunity to weigh in.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And the Secretary of the Executive Office of Health and Human Services, Elizabeth Roberts.
Thank you.